Hey, you're listening to World Cafe. I'm Talia Schlanger. Today's guest is an all-around shock to the system. He won NPR Music's Tiny Desk Contest back in 2015, a Grammy a couple years later. It's Fantastic Negrito. Fantastic Negrito tackles addiction, poverty, racism, and gun violence on his latest album. It's called Please Don't Be Dead, and it was just nominated for a Grammy. Congratulations. On the cover, there's a photo of Fantastic Negrito lying in a hospital bed, covered in bandages with casts on his arms.
It is, in fact, when I did wake up from a three-week coma about 19 years ago.
Fantastic Negrito tells the story of the car accident that put him in that coma, plus what it was like to be one of 14 kids raised by a strict Muslim father in the 70s. He ran away from home at 12 and taught himself to play music later at Berkeley.
I sneak into the university, into the music classes where people would practice, and I just pretend I was a student.
He's come a long way since then. He even got a $1 million record deal that was eventually dropped. He will tell you the whole story, and boy, is it a story. Fantastic Negrito is a guy who wants to be heard. And he's a guy who wants to be seen. When he came into World Cafe, he was wearing this loud, funky, royal purple and gold embroidered jacket. His hair was braided on both sides with this explosive shock of Afro mohawk in the middle. And when most of our guests sign our Wall of Fame, they use one Sharpie and find some small spot that hasn't already been taken up. Fantastic Negrito used two Sharpies, and in big, huge writing, he made sure we would always know he was here. He and his band started off our session on stage at World Cafe with a live rendition of the song Plastic Hamburgers.
Yeah.
Live from World Cafe, that is Fantastic Negrito with Plastic Hamburgers from his new record, Please Don't Be Dead. Fantastic Negrito, welcome to the World Cafe.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. Normally, it's a very boring question to ask an artist about their band name, but I think in this case...
I probably have the best band name in the world.
I think you kind of do.
Yeah.
And just for... I'm sure people have all sorts of different reactions to it, so would you just tell me why you chose it?
Well, I look at Fantastic Negrito. He's some kind of superhero or something. And I remember choosing that name for myself because I was really listening to a lot of black roots music, old stuff from the Delta. And this was really just in my soul and in my fiber and in my being. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. I want to honor that. I'm from California, and we have so many Spanish-speaking people, and I was just sitting in my art gallery. I remember there was some, like, marketing interns hanging out in the gallery, so I was really anxious to, you know, see what they thought about it. And I remember they go, Fantastic Negrito, boo! That's a terrible name. And I'm like, why? They said, well, this young guy gets up, and he goes, you know, Xavier, white people, we don't like saying the word Negrito. It makes us uncomfortable. And so I thought, well, that's perfect. That's a perfect name then. I love it. And I think artists, we have to make people uncomfortable a little bit. It's kind of our job in a way.
Yeah.
If we're not, then something's very wrong.
Well, you said it during your show. You said if I get lots of hate mail afterwards, I know that I've done something right.
Well, I said if I get some hate mail afterwards, I know that I've kind of done something. And I do get some hate mail, and it's okay.
Well, I love that you force people to say something that might make them uncomfortable, that also shines a spotlight on something that's really important to you, which clearly, because you've chosen
it. Well, what it is, it's like Negrito is just Spanish. It's like, hello.
Yeah.
What have we done to people that they don't know Spanish? Negrito. Negro means black. Ito means small. Mm. Nothing wrong here.
Right?
You know? Yeah, it's all good.
You say it like a term of endearment, right?
Well, even beyond that, it's not, if you say Negrito, that doesn't, it just means what it means. It's not like the N-word, not even close. And anyone who thinks that just really hasn't, that means you're not really opening up your world to the rest of the world. You're stuck somewhere in this weird world. Get to know more Latino people, maybe. Mm. And you'll see that that's not an offensive word at all. But we are kind of freaked out in this society. Everybody's freaked out. Oh, no. Oh, no, I'm a racist. Run. Or I've been labeled a sexist. You know, it's like the plague. You know, it's like everyone's afraid. And I think it really takes away from when there really is racism and when there really is sexism.
So sort of along similar lines, the title of your latest record, Please Don't Be Dead, who is that addressed to?
I think it was addressed to the country that I live in, the United States. I remember being overseas, and I think I said it during the show, people were like, what's going on in America? What's going on in America? People are so freaked out over, like, what's going on in America. So I get asked that so many times. And I was like, this is interesting. Mm. And so I started thinking about being an American and what that meant to the rest of the world and how they viewed us. And they view us as this place where immigrants came and they built this amazing country, and it's this welcoming country, and you can do anything in America and be whoever you want, and it's a land of the free and liberty and justice and equity. And it just wasn't acting like that anymore. So I thought, well, America, I think I figured you out. You're kind of like a diet to me. You're like a diet.
A diet?
Yeah, it's like a diet. Like, you're on the diet, you're trying, but you just keep eating the donuts. And you're on the diet, and like, oh, I shouldn't have ate that. And so that's how I kind of started viewing America. Like, I shouldn't have ate that. And I think that it's an amazing idea. It's like, it's a great idea to try to have a country that is welcoming, that's loving. And we do claim to be the greatest country in the world. And I thought, well, that's something to really, that's like a diet. Let's keep trying to be on the diet. It's not perfect. There's a lot of things wrong here, but it's a diet, damn it. And let's stay on the diet of liberty, justice, equity, peace, openness. I like that. That's a good America.
That's a good diet.
It's a damn good diet.
And kale. It sounds really balanced.
I don't think I'm political either. Like, people say, I love how you're political. There's nothing really political about that. I think it's just being a person that lives on the planet.
You introduced the song A Boy Named Andrew in the live performance that you did a little bit earlier as part of that story, I guess, informed by your experiences in Europe, people wondering what was happening to America.
Yeah.
So who's Andrew?
I think Andrew's me.
Okay.
It's like an I grew up being a little out of my mind.
What do you mean?
Being a bit of a delinquent and being in trouble with the law. And so it was a alias that I used to use. Mm. And I was in and out of foster homes, and so I would use that name sometimes.
Andrew.
Yeah, I just thought it sounded really decent.
Huh.
And so I don't know if I was that very decent at the time, and I wanted to come off as very decent.
Well, I want people to hear your performance of the song and then maybe talk about how you got there, like the pre-Andrew part, okay? Can we go over to the stage at World Cafe and hear the song?
Let's go.
All right.
Smell immigrant blood.
That's Fantastic Negrito live on stage at World Cafe. That was a boy named Andrew. What you got the audience to do in the middle of that song was quite powerful and harrowing, like asking people to look inside themselves at their own immigrant blood.
Yeah. I mean that because that's who we are. That's who we are. Let's not forget who we are.
Mm-hmm.
People came here, whichever way they came. We are all immigrants, and that's why we're amazing.
I want to talk about your own family growing up. Was your dad born in America?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, my dad was born in 1905.
Wow.
My mom was 33 years younger.
Wow.
So it was a very interesting household.
And you had you had 13 siblings, I think.
I have 13. I'm the eighth of 14.
So tell me a little bit about growing up with your parents. What kind of guy was your dad?
My dad was a very religious Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
And before it was popular, you know.
You're growing up Muslim in the 70s, maybe?
70s. I'm an old guy, everybody. I'm old. I look good, but I'm old.
But it had to be, I wonder, like, how many people knew much about what it was to...
They didn't know anything, especially that was in New England. I was born in New England,
mm-hmm.
in the Berkshires. So my dad, you know, he's very religious, but his friends were from everywhere. So here was my dad was hold court with like these, with the Winchesters. They were the people who made the rifles, the Quakers, the Russian Jews. My dad was all over the place. So I grew up, you know, just accepting people. And my dad's food, he had a restaurant that brought all those people together because he had this restaurant called Aladdin Restaurant. I think he was fooling white people. He said it was East African cuisine, but it was like fried bananas and couscous and samosa. So I grew up thinking like, hey, wait a minute, Indian people, you stole that from my dad, samosa. They're like, what are you talking about? And I thought, yeah, so he was serving kibbeh and like, he was a very interesting guy, you know? He was fearless. But it was not East African.
Yeah.
And I don't think, we weren't really East African, but he kind of told us that. The last name, couldn't meet anyone really with the last name, so I figured he just came up with it. And he's a very interesting guy, very intelligent guy, very, very advanced. I mean, and fearless, which was dangerous for a black person in 1905.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he embellished a lot and he made a lot of things up. And I respect him for it now, and good for him. He survived.
What was he like to you when you were a kid?
Very strict. You know, 1905, that's a...
Right.
Very strict and very demanding, very high standards.
So then you left home when you were 12.
I left home when I was 12.
That is small. That's little.
I don't want anyone else to do that. I did because I was raised by a man from 1905, and I think he was, in his weird way, preparing me at a very young age for independence because I didn't like the idea of growing up in under the yoke of religion. I couldn't stand it.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't for me. I knew at a young age, I was like, this doesn't sound right.
What, like there were things that you
five
had to do
and
or
six,
believe?
I just didn't want to, I didn't like it. It wasn't a happy place and I wasn't happy. And he moved us from New England to Oakland and that was bam, that was my...
Wow.
That was the cue. I was like, oop, I'm in Oakland, wow. The beginning of hip hop, oh, wow, punk music, wow. Freedom, marijuana, girls, alcohol, bye, Dad.
At 12?
Yeah, why not?
So you leave, you're like swept up by this music,
I guess,
and the idea of other things in your family. But like in reality, how do you get by when you're 12 years old and you're like, leave your 13 siblings and your parents? Like, what do you say? Do you say on a day like, bye, guys, I'm leaving? Or
no, I just didn't come home.
And then how'd you get by? Who are you with?
Well, I met my family. Yeah, I survived, you know, by the love of the tribe. I call the Bay Area the tribe. It was just, I think the tribe took care of me. I don't know if that can still happen again, so if you're 12, don't do it. But I think it was supposed to happen to prepare me to be Fantastic Negrito.
Wow.
All these things happened.
Was it the 80s?
80s.
So that's like around the time that your Andrew, who you're referencing.
Yeah.
Comes to be. So
yeah, I made it up.
You made it up. So what did you need to put on the character of Andrew to get out of?
Well, all the trouble I was getting.
Yeah, that's the thing. So Oakland.
Also, Massachusetts. So I knew how to, you know, I could like talk like I had like the Caucasian dialect down, like in Sorry to Bother You. Have you ever seen that? You know, I could do that. I could be that guy. And so that made white people feel better, that I could sound a certain way. That's reality.
Do you mean you got...
I could understand white people. I was from Great Barrington, Massachusetts, man. I knew all about them.
Right.
So that was easy. You know, if the cops came, like there's a group of us, they'd let me talk. they knew. And so I came to Oakland, you know, and that was, I had both sides, you know, and so I could fit into both worlds. And people were very comfortable with me.
You could code switch.
That's right.
Which is, I guess.
You got survival. Yeah. You got to survive.
So then you end up teaching yourself how to actually play music.
First, I wanted to be an amateur boxer, so I did that.
Okay.
Until I was about 17, and I remember seeing the copy of an album called Dirty Mind. Mm. And there was a guy named Prince on it, and they were like, no, but he's straight. And he's got all kinds of women. I thought, well, he dresses like how I want to dress, you know. And he's like wearing this outrageous like costume, and that's kind of what I did. But I couldn't play any instruments. So I was like, oh, I got to learn how to play. So I looked up, how did this guy Prince learn? And so he taught himself. I was like, well, damn, I need to teach myself. Where can I find a piano? I thought, where would they have pianos? At the university. But I didn't go to the university. So I sneak into the university, into the music classes where people would practice, and I just pretend I was a student. That was the beginning of it.
I want to get back to the stage at World Cafe Live and hear another live one. What's a good song that represents that sort of period of your life from the new record?
I think A Cold November Street.
Yeah, tell me a bit about that.
I don't know. It represents to me a lot of the Bay Area. You love it and it's terrible. It's like it's but such is life.
And it's home.
It's home. In America, I feel the same way. There's terrible things, but you love it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's great things, but there's bad things. It's like my dad. He's my hero, but he was terrible. And I think that that's okay, actually. I don't think that we should get bent out of shape about, like, the idea, like, oh, I'm an American and I love my country, but there's some really bad things about it, and we're going to make it better. Mm-hmm. Like, why? I can't understand, like, why that's not acceptable.
Right.
My people freak out when you... If you don't like it, just leave. You know, it's like, well, which you should do that with your kids or with you know, like something. So get out of here. No, let's work on it. Let's be better.
Let's be better.
Thank you very much. It's a good time to be an artist right now. There's a lot to write and sing and film and paint and dance about. Doesn't matter where you are on the spectrum, have a voice. And I always like when I get a little hate mail after a show. It lets me know that I'm on the right track. In Philadelphia, if I've offended you, store, and I'm really not sure if they ask so late.
a girl, and I'm really not sure what all it really means. But when the old man cries, he's a woman sometimes on a cold November street.
That's Cold November Street. That's such a powerful song, live by our guest, Fantastic Negrito, here at World Cafe. That is really powerful. And the way that you say, I'm sorry, in that song is really powerful. Who are you saying I'm sorry to?
I guess everyone and no one, because I'm not sorry, actually. You know what I mean? Mm. But I think it's a wonderful thing to say. My agenda is righteousness, it's love, it's acceptance, it's compassion. That's where I want to be. And I fail a lot. So that's what I'm sorry about, I guess.
Mm. So that song is from your latest record, from Please Don't Be Dead.
Yes.
And the cover of the album represents another really important moment in your life and career, I think. For people who haven't seen the physical cover, could you describe it?
Well, I described that cover when I saw it again, which was about a year ago, and I thought, this would be a great album cover, which freaked everybody out. I thought, this looks like America, like right now. This looks like where we are, like right now. We've just been in a terrible accident, and we just woke up from a three-week coma.
So that's the picture. Like, that's the picture.
Well, that's what you told me to describe it. That picture said that to me. Otherwise, I would have never used it. But it is, in fact, when I did wake up from a three-week coma about 19 years ago.
So how did you end up in the coma that you woke up from?
Well, it was a car accident. I was in L.A. at the time. I had a $1 million record deal. It was probably the peak of my narcissism and self-indulgence, being a young, good-looking artist. I used to be young and pretty. Oh, Lord. But, and just like excess, and I ended up, in a car accident and in a coma for 3 weeks and destroying my playing hand.
Right. So that... I can't imagine what that's like to have a $1 million record deal.
1 million.
Right? And to be living this high life,
yeah.
And then to wake up and find the right hand that you need to strum on your guitar and do your... It's your right...
It was
your
right
hand, right? Yeah, so doing strumming and picking and all that stuff, you don't know what's going to be of it.
Well, according to them, they're like, over. And that picture was, I think my friend who took it was like, he was like in the business and he was the one that was like, hey, I'm delivering the message. You're dropped from the label. And so it was like, you're dropped from the label, you're laying in a hospital bed, you can't even use the bathroom by yourself, You know what I mean? I thought I was a soldier because I'd been out so long, and because I didn't know all the nurses were Filipino. So they go, "You've been in a very terrible accident." And I'm like, "Oh man, did we go to war?" Like, I didn't know that.
Wow.
So I thought I was in another country. So it was very strange.
Strange, and I imagine terrifying, depressing.
Yeah, not like, depressing. Depressing never.
No?
It was just like, wow. I think that I was on so many drugs. It was incredible. And like, I'm an optimist in a weird. So I thought, okay, let's start moving my foot here. I remember doing it. Let's start moving the toes because the comeback starts now. You know, it's like, so I never felt down.
Wow.
Like you couldn't play. I was like, so the first thing I did when I was able to get out of the hospital is I bought a grand piano.
Really?
Yeah, because I thought, let's play, man.
And so at that point, how much could you move your
nothing.
Hand?
It was just like clunk, 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 but I just kept on. I kept thinking there's people worse off than me. I can do it. And
so what did you think you were going to do for a living if you
found music.
Out? Yeah. Really? So you're like, drop from the label, not sure if you can use your hand.
I don't care.
Figuring out how to walk, that's it. Yeah.
That's when I got into the whole Afro-punk scene. I started these bands where I could just be a front man and not have to play. And then I became like completely just experimental and free and lived in the underground. And then I quit and became a farmer, a cannabis farmer, and up in Oakland. And then I came back as Fantastic Negrito, so it's like three different sections.
So many different lives. So what musical moment like brought you back and birthed Fantastic Negrito from?
Well, I wanted to have children, and so I had a son.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, good, I have a son. I'm happy. I live on a farm. I grow lots of weed. I'm doing well. One day, this little guy, I don't know, was he a year and a half? I couldn't.
Your son?
Yeah, I couldn't put him to sleep. I couldn't get him down. And I remember there was this one guitar that I couldn't sell because it was useless. I picked it up. I looked at him, and I just strummed the G major, and he went crazy. And then I stopped, and I remember the sun was in the room. It was just so sunny that day, and I felt strange. I felt like something was happening in this room.
Mm.
It's a little scary. It's a little exciting. I felt goosebumps, and I thought, I just played a G major. And this kid went crazy. So I thought to myself, you know what? I'll start playing some acoustic guitar.
We're going to hear you perform one more live song for us, and it's Letter to Fear.
Okay.
And I don't think of you as somebody who deals much in fear.
Well, I do.
Do you?
I'm terrified of every time I get on stage right before. I mean, I can't eat. I'll throw up. I'm terrified.
So what's
But I'm confident.
Yeah.
I know I'm the greatest of all time, but I'm terrified. And it's the same duality. I mean, that's good. It makes me stay on top of it. I take it very seriously that I'm going to play this music and it's going to relate to people. I take it very seriously.
So what's this Letter to Fear about?
I wrote Letter to Fear, I think, when I was just coming on a plane back from San Diego. I was playing some big show. And I was on the plane, and there was a shooting in Texas, and it was a church. And I just thought, again? Like, I refused to get used to this. And there was a lot of people, like, driving cars into crowds of innocent people. And I said, I refuse to accept this. And I refuse to be afraid. Mm-hmm. And it is a little terrifying, but I refuse to let fear win the day.
Well, we're going to go out on your live performance of that song. And I want to thank you, Fantastic Negrito, so much for being here. I've learned a lot talking to you.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, here we go. Letter to Fear.
Whatever you do to me, I will carry on. Whatever you say to me, I will carry on.
performing on stage at World Cafe, A Letter to Fear. That is Fantastic Negrito from his album, Please Don't Be Dead, his 2018 album, which since we recorded this session has been nominated for a Grammy. Best Contemporary Blues Album. Same category. He has already won once. So best of luck, Fantastic Negrito. Maybe you can put another one on your shelf, wherever you keep them. What a fascinating guest. I love talking to him. Thanks to our senior producer, Kimberly Junod, for all her work on that session. Fantastic Negrito and his band. I'm Talia Schlanger, and you are listening to The World Cafe.